Welcome to the Original Gangsters Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Bernstein. We're going to do a more of a historical-themed episode today and focus on the one, the only, the infamous Walter Nergett Stadnik, Hell's Angels overlord, the national president of Canada going on 40 years. For 81 Nation, and right now in the 2020s, he is, I would say, without question, the most powerful biker boss in the world right now. And he is a very, very shadowy, mysterious Wizard of Oz-like character. And he is been a revolutionary in a lot of ways, in the way that he's stabilized and built up, the Hell's Angels brand in Canada after some shaky, early growing pains in the late 70s, early 80s, and has been a Napoleon, an Alexander the Great, a Genghis Khan, type of people that have conquered the world. And that's what Nergett Stadnik has done in terms of the biker world. He went, and it's a true rags to riches story, rags to royalty. He went from nothing, somebody that had, had gotten rejected from some 1% clubs early on in his climb up the ranks and early on in him building his reputation, and got into the Hell's Angels in the early 1980s and reshaped it in his image. So we're going to talk about the history of Nergett Stadnik and how the Hell's Angels came to Ontario. So I think, I tout Montreal Hell's Angel boss Marty Robert is probably the most compelling organized crime figure in, on the planet right now. And if he's, the most compelling, then, Nergett is the most mysterious, has the most mystique surrounding him, so shadowy and stealthy, and he's Kaiser Soze, to use an analogy from the movie The Usual Suspects. And you don't see the guy a lot, at least not since he came home from prison a decade ago. You don't see him in the headlines. He keeps his head low, goes about his business, and just the way that he has structured the Hell's Angels in Canada with all the layers of insulation, taking a page out of traditional Italian LCN. And I know he grew up around a lot of those not LCN, but mafia guys in Hamilton. We'll get into that in a moment. But, some of his reshaping of the Hell's Angels and his, right now it's a 37-year run right now, I believe, 37-38-year run. And in that time, having flip the script on the blueprint and the paradigm. And a lot of that is learning from the mistakes of other people in your position historically, and learning from some of the greats. And Nergett has created his own legacy. But you can see inspirations from a lot of different organized crime spaces. to lift Nurgut Stadnik to the level of icon that he is right now today. And like I said, he's the most powerful biker boss on the, you know, around the globe right now. So, you know, he came up in Hamlin. It's no secret. This is well known about Nurgut Stadnik that he's from Hamilton. He comes from a Ukrainian bloodline. His family had no ties to criminal groups or anything. Grew up in Upper Hamilton. Started jumping around to a bunch of different clubs in the 70s, the Cossacks, the Wild Ones. And built early relationships with Italian mob guys in Ontario, both in Hamilton and Toronto. Some guys from across the border, some of the Buffalo LCN guys, but also guys that weren't related to the mafia in the United States. Sometimes some of these groups were Endragada, Calabrian, and, you know, other groups. So he was very well connected from a early age, and in the sense that he knew that he was going to forge ties at a young age, and he intentionally forged these ties that with the eye on the future. So Hell's Angels came to be in Canada in December of 1977. The patch over from the Popeyes. At this time, Nurgut was still about five years away from becoming a Hell's Angel. And he didn't initially want to become a Hell's Angel. He wanted to become a Satan's Choice. Because back in the 70s, even though the Hell's Angels were knocking on the door of Canadian 1% nation, they didn't enter the picture until the last couple of years. Satan's Choice was the premier club in Canada at that time. That was where the prestige factor was. And Nurgut wanted to become a Satan's Choice. Satan's Choice wouldn't take him. And it ended up being a mistake, because, you know, right now Satan's Choice are roaring back after 25 years being extinct. With Harley, but who knows what would have happened if Saint's Choice would have brought Nurgut into the mix in the late 70s. And this was when Bernie the Frog was locked up, and you had a lot of political machinations there that would eventually lead to the downfall of the first, or I guess it would be officially the second iteration of the Satan's Choice. But, you know, one of those key miscalculations was telling Nurgut Stadnik to kick bricks. He, at that point, you know, sets his eyes on becoming a Hell's Angel, even though he's from Ontario, from Hamilton, starts spending a lot of time in Quebec, getting to know the big shot callers for the Hell's Angels in Montreal. And he eventually patches in a spring 1982 ceremony. He's patched into the South chapter in Montreal out of Sorel. And he's, although he belongs to the South chapter of Montreal, he's sent back home to Hamilton. And he's kind of a one-man Hell's Angel show in Hamilton and in Ontario at that point. And it looks like he's gaining traction in his plan to bring the Hell's Angels more into Ontario in the early 80s. But then there's a situation with his bodyguard and his translator, a guy named Frenchie Malieu, who, you know, goes crazy, kills his girlfriend and I think his own kid on a coke binge, and that one-man show that is the Nergit Stadnik Hells Angels operation in Ontario takes a couple steps back before they can go forward. They lose standing. And the perception is that, you know, Nergit couldn't control his guys, his main guy. Nergit didn't, you know, another common theme in when we're talking about the legacy and history of Walter Stadnik, Nergit, is, you know, he had the odds stacked against him from the jump in a number of ways. In this case, he needed a translator because he didn't speak French. I don't know if he speaks French today. So you know, this is a guy that rose to the top of the Hells Angels mountain in Canada, where there's so much of a French Canadian, you know, and a French speaking influence in where, you know, the mothership has always been, which has been in Montreal, that, you know, he had extra hurdles to climb, and he was still able to do it despite this, you know, bump in the road where his right-hand man loses it. And that blows back on him, makes him look bad. And some of those issues were with Yves Bateau, who was the national president of the first ever national president of the Hells Angels in Canada. And Yves Bateau initially was in favor of Nergit Stadnik and empowering him in Hamilton. I think what happened with Meliu gave Bateau some pause, and it stalled Stadnik's ascent for a little bit. But Bateau was assassinated in, I believe, 1983. And that, you know, changes everything. It was 83 or 84. And Sky Langlois, Michelet Sky Langlois, one of the founding fathers of the Montreal Hells Angels and Hells Angels in Canada, was one of the original OGs back in 1977. He takes over as the national president, and Sky Langlois and Nergit Stadnik are close. So Nergit's star is back on the rise when Sky Langlois takes over from a slain Yves Bateau. Now, this brings us to another anecdote or situation that plays into the Nergit Stadnik mystique, you know, the urban legend status that he has. He travels to Yves Bateau's wake and funeral in Quebec, and on his way home on his Harley back to Hamilton, he gets into a motorcycle accident, and his face gets scarred with charred, gnarled shrapnel and battery acid, almost like, you know, this is a little bit of an exaggeration, but kind of like in the, you know, the Tim Burton Batman, Jack Napier becomes the Joker. This was kind of like when Nergit Stadnik takes this, you know, seemingly horrible situation that, you know, scars his face for life, and he flips it, and he becomes like this superhero villain, and his ascent starts to, you know, go through the roof really, really fast. He, you know, between 19, let's say 83, 84 and 88, he went from a one-man show in Hamilton to the most powerful Hells Angel in all of Canada when he succeeds Sky Langlois as president of the Canadian Hells Angels. And it's a job he's held, like I said, 37 years. So, you know, this just becomes part of that Kaiser Soze mythology, with the injury from the bike accident and with Lingua as the number one shot caller for the Hells Angels in Canada, he empowers Stadnik to start on a recruiting mission. And Yves Buteau had taken 81 and moved the Hells Angels west and gone into British Columbia. But under Nurgut, it went to a whole other dimension, or under Sky Lingua, and then by giving Nurgut the authority to go around Canada politicking and just gobbling up territory, patching over smaller clubs, starting new clubs. And he's really on this, you know, he sees his destiny as spreading 81 across Canada. And by making as many connections as he can across Canada, outside of Hamilton, he's going to plant the seeds to become the most powerful Hells Angel in the world eventually. And he goes out to a lot of different provinces, a lot of different major city centers in Canada over the next 10 years, 10, 15 years, actually. It's probably about a 15, not about, it was a 15-year, decade and a half recruiting campaign that culminates in 2000. And we'll get to that in a moment. But the, you know, being a guy from Ontario, he made it very clear to Sky Lingua and all the other major influencers in Hells Angel Nation back in the 80s when Nurgut was tasked with going out and winning hearts and minds. He wanted the Golden Horseshoe. He wanted to have that part of Ontario, that Hamilton, Niagara, Toronto triangle, and wanted them firmly under the Hells Angel banner. And you got to remember this was still at a time where the Outlaws played a major role in Canadian biker activity. They're still around. They're still, they exist in Canada now, mostly in some parts of Ontario. But at one point they were in Montreal. That's how Yves Buteau was assassinated. He was assassinated as part of the Hells Angels Outlaws War. But Outlaws have been out of Quebec for a while. They're pretty marginalized in terms of overall influence in Canada by just kind of sticking to Ontario. But getting all of Ontario, but particularly the Golden Horseshoe, under his thumb was, you know, that was always the ultimate goal for Nurgut Stadnik, and that was his dream, and did everything he could to achieve that dream. And it was just really pounding the pavement. He's a working class superstar. You know, like I said, he didn't come from anything. You know, he did a ton of heavy lifting to launch himself onto the throne. And he was no silver spoon gangster. You know, he was hardcore from day one. This is a grassroots biker god. If there were any, like, he's the number one guy right now, and he came from nothing. So he sets his sight on the Golden Horseshoe. But again, just like how this whole thing was a 15-year endeavor, the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow is the Golden Horseshoe. It is Toronto, and Niagara, and getting, you know, kind of ironic is that Walter Stadnik, being a Hamilton guy, was always resistant to put a chapter in Hamilton. Eventually they did, Hammertown. But he was way more intrigued by taking Toronto than he was dominating Hamilton, even though it's kind of maybe one leads to another. But trying to get Toronto was a big undertaking, and it took a while, but he eventually succeeded, and we'll get to that in a moment. So by the mid 80s, he is one of the people that brings in Monboucher, Maurice Monboucher, who would go on to become probably more notorious than Nergat in terms of public profile. Infamy, I would say Nergat takes the cake when you compare him to Monboucher, but as you know, close to the vest as Nergat Stadnik is, and as calculated as Nergat in terms of everything being the long game, Monboucher was impulsive, and Monboucher was obsessed with the spotlight. And because of that, the narrative has gotten twisted. And there's I would say the majority of the public thinks that Monboucher mentored Nergat Stadnik, or during the biker war, or then the Great Quebec Biker War against the Rock Machine, or in other times that Boucher was calling shots and Stadnik was following orders, when in fact it was reversed. Stadnik was the mentor, Boucher was the mentee, and he was a perfect front boss, if for lack of a better term. He controlled Montreal, Quebec. Nergat was the national president, but based out of Hamilton. You know, you had a situation where all of the media attention fell to Monboucher, and it let Nergat stay in the shadows like he wanted to. I mean, eventually would catch up to him, and he'd have to do a decade in the can, but it didn't derail the power train the way it did with Monboucher. So you had the first attempt by Nergat to get Toronto was in the late 80s. They try to make a deal with the Vagabonds to patch over and become the first 81 chapter in Toronto. But Vagabonds have a boss named Donnie Melanson, who they called Snorkel. And Snorkel gets into debt to a bunch of people, I believe, including some Hell's Angels. And he gets killed in September of 1987. And that, for the moment, ends Nergat's attempt to get a Hell's Angel chapter in Toronto. This was a year before Nergat became national president, or maybe a couple of, let's say 6 months, six, seven, 8 months. This was the fall of 87, and he took over in, I think, the spring or summer of 88. So he takes the throne, but is still at that point hesitant to put a chapter in Hamilton. Instead, starts off in Ontario, even though they don't got Toronto. They put a big emphasis on Niagara, the Niagara Peninsula. He goes to Winnipeg and absorbs the Los Bravos Motorcycle Club. After they finish a war, Los Bravos were in a war in Winnipeg with the Spartans Motorcycle Club. 30 murders in the early 90s. This was like right before the Great Quebec Biker War. And that had like 200 murders, but there were like 30 murders in this conflict. And Nergat recruits Los Bravos, and they become the Winnipeg chapter of the Hells Angels. Then there's another situation that sets them back in Toronto with the Demon Keepers. And that was a bit of a mess. So it's like you keep falling off the horse in terms of conquering Toronto, but Stadnik is resilient, and you know, the more he falls down, the quicker he gets back up and starts charging forward like a bulldog, a pit bull. He's not going to be, you know, no matter how much resistance, it's never going to dissuade him. So as he's still trying to get into Toronto, goes and gets Calgary and Edmonton. Takes over Alberta, then Saskatchewan. So he's just like, he's like a Pac-Man, you know, gobbling up all this turf, planting flags for Hell's Angels nation, laying the foundation for what is today in the 2020s, the most influential national faction of Hell's Angels on the planet. They got the power. It's no longer in the U.S. It's no longer in California. The power runs through Canada with Nurgis Dadnik and Marty Robert. And Marty Robert right now is what Mom Boucher was 30 years ago, but 10 times better, improved. He has all of Mom Boucher's positive attributes with none of the negative attributes. So it's like you got the best of Mom Boucher, you get the best of Nurgis Dadnik, you sprinkle in a little Vito Rizzuto, and that's Marty Robert today. But just like before, in the way that Stadnik has structured Hell's Angels in Canada, it's more of a mafia structure than a biker club structure. And Marty Robert is, you know, to make the analogy to La Cosa Nostra or to the mob in Montreal, you know, he's a street boss. He runs day-to-day operations for the Hell's Angels, not just in Canada, but around the world. Because Nurgis Dadnik is, he's the Pied Piper. I mean, he's the godfather, the boss of bosses. And this is how he became that. And in finally succeeding in conquering Toronto was a huge crown, or a huge jewel in his crown. So in the late 1990s, he's got some internal issues he has to deal with. One of his rivals is a guy named Scott Steiner. They called him TNT or Scotty Sensation. This was a U.S.-born biker from Wisconsin that came to Canada, the Montreal area, when he was in his late teens. And he became his own kind of one-man army and challenged, if not overtly, subliminally, was challenging Stadnik and Mom Boucher. He was aligned with Mom Boucher, at least at a point, until he wasn't. And you had this power dispute between, at one point, Steiner and Boucher. And then on the other side, you had Stadnik, David the Wolf Carroll from Halifax, and Sky Lingua. I don't know if that's the proper way to articulate it. It wasn't like they both had groups of soldiers that were ready to go start fighting each other. It was like one or two of these guys were just going to be wiped off the map. This wasn't going to be a faction versus another faction thing. And Steiner lost that game of chicken. But him and his bodyguard, Bam Bam Magnuson, were making a lot of waves in the late 1990s, mid to late 1990s. During the war, they were fighting on the front lines of the Great Quebec Biker War against the Rock Machine, which was giving them a lot of juice and keeping them in the good graces, despite maybe some of the headaches they were creating. They were putting in work, and Steiner was, you know, he was an explosives expert, and allegedly he was the guy that planted the bomb that killed one of their rivals, but it also killed an 11-year-old boy, and that was one of the major events that started to turn the public against the bikers and really put the onus on law enforcement to nip what had gotten out of control in the bud. They couldn't really nip it in the bud, but they were chasing this thing down for another 5-6 years. But when he had an 11-year-old boy killed by a car bomb when he's just playing hockey on the street because there's flying shrapnel that kills this kid, it in terms of PR, it was the Hells Angels took a big hit there. And a lot of people blame Steiner, and it was kind of some more ammunition to use against him. Bam Bam Magnuson also provided his enemies, adversaries, ammunition to use against him. He got into a bar brawl with Leonardo Rizzuto, the current mafia don of the Sicilian mob in Montreal. Leonardo is Vito's son. Vito's long gone. He's been gone for 12 years now. Leonardo has been the boss now for about 8 years. But back in 1997, 1998, he was a kid, a younger guy. I believe he was in his late 20s, going to law school. And he gets into a bar fight, and Bam Bam Magnuson knocks him out, takes him out into the alley, roughs him up. So at that point, you know, Magnuson and Steinhardt are living on borrowed time. Steinhardt's got his hands in a lot of different pies and is encroaching on prostitution territory that Nergit and Mom Boucher and Wolf Carroll all have a piece of. He's trying to put his own, it's called Sensations, escort service. And, you know, he was also, there were questions about him cooperating. I know that he was fighting deportation for a long time. This was Scott Steinhardt. The Crown was trying to kick him back to the United States, and he kept on beating deportation orders, which was giving more ammunition to the other Hells Angels powers with the belief that he could have been a informant. And then they leave him off of the roster of the Nomads, and Nergit and Mom Boucher create a Nomads chapter at the height of the Great Quebec Biker War in the mid-90s, late 90s, which will be like an all-star team, a dream team of Hell's Angels, guys that have, you know, have bodies, and guys that won't have any specific geographic location attached to them. They can go wherever they want. Steinhardt was not awarded entrance into the Nomads. And, you know, that sets off this chain of events where late 97, Steinhardt and Bam Bam Magnuson are called to a meeting with Mom Boucher, and they're both beaten to death with hammers, their bodies thrown in the St. Leonard River. So, you know, and then Magnuson was already on bad terms with Nergit because he had killed a Los Bravos leader when they were in the final stages of negotiating for the Los Bravos to come over and become Hells Angels and plant the flag in Winnipeg. And Bam Bam Magnuson let his temper get the best of him. So this was kind of it'd been in the works for a while, but it was also a way for Nergit to make a statement in a similar way that Skyline Gua made a statement with the Lennoxville massacre, that on my watch, you know, any type of subversive behavior is going to be dealt with, and dealt with in a very brutal, ruthless manner. So you had Nergit's dream finally came true. December 29th, 2000, the grand patch over. It's done in South Shore of Montreal, the Sorel chapter, and 200 guys come in. And some of those guys are the means to the end, which is planting the flag for Hell's Angels in Toronto, what Nergit had always dreamed of doing and intended on doing. It's finally done. 200 guys come in. Satan's Choice hangs up their spurs as the, you know, the definitive Canadian born and bred 1% club, finally acquiesces, joins the Hells Angels on that evening. They're joined by a big chunk of the Outlaws, Rock Machine, Paradise Rollers, Last Chance, the Loners, the Lobos. You had a lot of the Rock Machine guys that had fought in the Great Quebec Biker War that didn't want to go with their leadership that was going towards the Banditos and patching over there. Nurgis Dadnik makes another, you know, statement and, playing chess when everybody else is playing checkers. He goes to the Satan's Choice that doesn't want to go with the Banditos. And if they go to the Banditos, which is where they went, they had to start as prospects. And Nurgis goes to a lot of big-time Rock Machine and says, fuck that prospect shit. You come into the Hells Angels, this is patch for patch. So some major Rock Machine guys, some of the founders, led by Sasquatch Porter, come over and become Hells Angels. And then, you know, with Sasquatch Porter, Nurgis now has Ottawa on lockdown. So Satan's Choice gives seven chapters to the Hells Angels, and that becomes a lot of that becomes the Toronto East chapter. As I said, Sasquatch Porter becomes a nomad and takes Ottawa. Paradise Riders, they become the Toronto Central chapter. And I believe also they get the downtown chapter. They're led by a guy named John Winter Neal. And then the Last Chance MC becomes the Toronto West club. Paradise Rider boss, Donnie Peterson, Heavy Duty, Sleazy D. He becomes the godfather of Toronto for the Hells Angels. Former Paradise Rider. He patches over and takes over Toronto. And like I said, gives his Nurgis Dadnik that jewel for his crown. The piece de resistance. That's what Nurgis had been gunning for. He finally got it. And then finally, going to Nurgis' home stomping grounds of Hamilton and Niagara, he makes another unconventional decision, but it's a decision that turns out to reap a lot of benefits. And that's always, you know, bottom line brass tacks, meaning this decision to give the Niagara chapter to Skinny Ward, Gerald Ward, Skinny Ward, a guy that is has an historic track record as a drug kingpin in Hamilton, but wasn't really a biker. And Nurgis thinking outside the box and knowing that having a guy like Skinny Ward on your team, even if he doesn't fit the traditional biker boss mold, could be a real game changer. And that Niagara Peninsula was the maybe more important in some ways than the glitzier Toronto part of the Golden Horseshoe that Nurgis was looking to conquer, and he did. And Toronto is the, like I said, it's the sexier city. But when it came down to some of the cash rules everything around me, as Wu Tang says, bringing on Skinny Ward infused the Hells Angels in Ontario with a ton of money. So Nurgis had known Skinny Ward for a long time. You know, they had come up together on the streets of Hamilton, and before he was ever a Hells Angel, he was controlling a big chunk of dope territory in Ontario. And then he gets the Hells Angels patch December 2000, brings his boys in. That none of them ride motorcycles. They had to learn to ride bikes. And they're like, all of a sudden, they go from not being Hell's Angels to being, you know, the biggest earners in Ontario overnight. And a lot of that money was going into the, you know, the coffers of the leaders of the Canadian Hell's Angels, Nergit and the guys in Montreal. But at one point in time, Skinny Ward's organization had like 75% of the market in Niagara Falls, in that peninsula area. And like I said, you know, Toronto might be the bigger name, but in terms of day-to-day money, cha-ching, 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 Niagara Falls is you know, it's a tourist trap, and it's just everybody's looking to do blow in terms of party. Not, and Toronto's got its nightlife as well, but it was a big cash cow. And Niagara has always been an area that's been very important to Nergit's conquest of Ontario for the Hells Angels. And up until recently, you know, Craig Truck McKilquim, who was the boss of Niagara up until his assassination back in the spring, you know, he had a direct tie to Nergit. He was Nergit's bodyguard at one point. So thinking outside the box in the case of Skinny Ward really paid out. It was a long-term investment that paid out quickly and paid out over a long time, even though he had to go away too. But it was another big turning point in a positive way for Stadnik's Hell's Angels, you know, stamping the Ontario Kingdom, finally coming under the Hell's Angels in that big patch over. And you know, Skinny Ward was this X factor that not a lot of people knew about outside of Niagara Hamilton. And he came in and immediately became, like I said, biggest earner, biggest moneymaker in Ontario. He achieved his goal, had to go to prison for 10 years. Nergit's been out now for about 10 years. And his legacy, his legend, the mythology surrounding a Nergit, it grows every day. The less you see him, the louder the whispers get, the more globetrotting Marty Robert does. You know, you see Marty, you don't see Nergit, but believe me, Marty's speaking for Nergit. There's no daylight between Marty and Nergit. So the more you see Marty Robert gain power, this isn't like a zero-sum game where like Marty is gaining power and Nergit is losing power. Like, the more powerful Marty gets is the more powerful Nergit's getting. I guess maybe we buried the lead here. We're going to address it at the very end. How did Nergit Stadnik get his nickname? I heard from sources that I consider pretty good that it was just based on Stadnik being a flashier guy back in the day. He was known to kind of dress and look like a pimp. Now you don't see him a lot to really know exactly what he looks like. And that's by design. But he had like a gold, a gold chain with like a gold nugget. Somehow that got turned into Nergit. But it just meant that he'd travel with big chunks of gold on his neck, big chunks of cash in his pocket. And the nugget of gold or the nugget of cash became Nergit. That's what I heard. I don't know. Maybe Nergit one day can chime in and send word to me where he got the nickname from. But again, that adds to the mythology too. People have been debating the nickname for decades. But Nergit Stadnik right now in 2025, without question, the most influential 1% biker club boss in the world. Very easily could be the most powerful organized crime figure in the world. 7,000 strong, 7,000 full patch members of the Hell's Angels, 700 chapters, 70 countries, and the Canadian Hell's Angels have taken over the world. And that's why I compare Nergat Stadnik, to Napoleon or Alexander the Great, or, and then, like I said, throwing some, some Kaiser Soze, in terms of the urban legend status. But he didn't just take over Canada. He took over the world for the Hell's Angels and wanted to kind of give it the macro, but also give it the micro in terms of how it worked in Ontario and how, that was kind of my B storyline, which was taking Toronto, getting that much coveted territory that he'd always wanted, but then the macro being just the history of Nergat Stadnik, where he came from, how he was the definitive rags to riches story in the world of biker bosses, was never looked at early in his career as some rising star. He had to prove it time and time again. And just the picture of resilience, the picture of stealth, the picture of power right now. So that's the pod episode. We might have another pod just on Scott Steiner, TNT, the guy that tried to go to war with Nergat and ended up disappearing and floating in the river a couple hours later when he went to a meeting with Montboucher. I think that's a story that's been underreported in Hell's Angels Nation, at least outside of where it happened. And so look for another video on Scott Steiner and Bam Bam Magnuson, and maybe doing a little bit more of a deep dive into them, and not just giving you the end of their road, which is when they went head to head with Nergat, but maybe kind of give you some of the early stuff and stuff that they did before that happened. So look for that in the next couple of weeks. Please like, share, and subscribe the Original Gangsters podcast. I'm Scott Bernstein. I'm here every week, 24/7, whether it be here at Original Gangsters Pod, over at the Patreon, our members only, at our or at our web magazine companion, The Gangster Report. We're breaking down, analyzing the latest breaking news when it comes to anything in the North American underworld, bikers, mobsters, drug kingpins, the NBA mafia scandal. We were on top of that before anybody. Please come check out our coverage with that. When it comes to Canada, we are, even though we're across the border in Michigan, we are just chock full of sources out of Quebec and Ontario, both in law enforcement and guys on the street, Hell's Angels, bikers, guys from the Rizzuto clan, feeding us information so we can give you, right to the source, baby. You come to us, we get it from the source, and then we give it to you. So please keep checking in. Original Gangsters podcast. I'm Scott Bernstein, uncovering the underworld, one city, one region, one country at a time. I'm out.